and welcome to the Infinite Escape Room, the puzzling podcast where a gaggle of geographically diverse chums come together, solve a homemade escape room over the years, and then bugger off to the pub for a drink. My name's Jamie, I'm your host and puzzle master for this evening, and my face was named Rear of the Year for three consecutive years. Then the judges saw my actual ass and I was banned from the competition for life. And locked in with me this week, we have a dynamic duo of puzzling podcasters who make Penn & Teller look like Ren and Stimpy. If you have more than a casually flirting relationship with escape rooms, you know exactly who I'm talking about. Co-host of the Reality Escape Pod and part of the powerhouse that is Room Escape Artist and the Reality Escape Convention. My guests need no introduction, so I'll let them introduce themselves.
I'm David Spira, and I am also, in addition to all those things that Jamie just said, the creator of a new app called ChatGPS, where you tell it where you want to go, and it will generate directions for you, whether the roads are there or not.
I mean, that sounds more useful than what I've currently got, to be fair, where it just shouts at me in broken Welsh because it doesn't understand any of the names of the streets.
It's better than the binder of maps I used to have to carry around in my 20s. My name is PG Law, and this is a completely true fact, is that I have recently given birth to my dog. He has absolutely 100% come from my physical body. And it is a miracle of birth. What can I say?
Congratulations.
Thanks. I was single and lonely and I, you know, prayed to be happy and they sent me a dog. So
didn't quite read the terms and conditions of that particular contract. But you go, hang on. I just thought they would just arrive in the mail. What's going on? And I'm very happy for you both.
Thanks. I have shipped them off to summer day camp while we are doing this recording.
What's your precious pooch's name?
His name is Yum Yum.
It's a good name. I like it. You see, a lot of times when guests come on and we say to talk about a bullshit fact, more often than not, they will say something completely true, but it's so outlandish, we don't quite know.
I thought about taking that angle also, but then decided to just go ludicrous.
I don't know what you're talking about. I shared a completely true fact with the audience. Oh, this was supposed to be fake.
Of course, dear listeners, times are tough everywhere around the world, the escape room industry notwithstanding. So we have to rely on an increasingly bleak roster of startups, sponsors, and ne'er-do-wells to fund this little podcast. And of course, we don't get real sponsors, so we've made them up. And this week is no different. So this week's sponsor of the Infinite Escape Room is Political Party Cannon. Endorsed by one out of two presidential candidates and the entirety of British Parliament, the political party cannon is a must-have for any potential POTUS to sidestep a career-ending gaffe. With its patented bullshit broadcast technology, the political party cannon will ensure that your cheeky little televised racist tirade will be yesterday's news in seconds. When shit hits the fan, simply turn the dial for the level of conspiracy you want to create and hit the fire button. Now keyboard warriors on both sides of the aisles will hear your dog whistle from a mile away. Has a certain orange goblin paid yet another prostitute to give him what the Scottish call a sweaty haggis? Worry not, set the party cannon to DEFCON 3, and the media won't be able to stop talking about how the Teletubbies are woke propaganda because none of them will fuck or murder each other. Has the UK Premier once again embezzled the public funds to create an offshore sex harness out of £20 notes? Fire at DEFCON 2 and you'll see for the next week our front page exclusives about how Gen Z killed the dairy industry because of K-pop. If it doesn't make sense, it gets people angry. And when people are angry, they forget about what's important. The political party cannon. Bipartisan bullshit for fairer elections. Again, that could actually happen.
It probably has happened over here. I have zero doubt in my mind.
Also, of course, this podcast wouldn't be possible if not for the love and support of our wonderful army of patrons. You keep us off the streets and on the air. And this week's episode is brought to you by Charlotte Knowles, Maggie B, Richard Leggett, Will Ryder, CD Doyle, J. Cameron Cooper, Chris Mikesell, Carolyn Hardman, Myrie, and Teresa Lander. Thank you very much. And of course, if you want your name to be included in this wonderful list, then consider joining our Patreon program over at patreon.com/theinfiniteescaperoom, where for as little as £1 a month, you can get early access to episodes, analyze bonus content, join our Discord, and see some cool stuff that we don't show to the common folk.
Patrons are the best.
I love them. They're amazing. Hopefully, we're going to try and bring some folks on to a future episode as well, which would be really fun. Because that's pretty much how I started, was as a fanboy, and slowly weaseled my way in to hosting episodes. So the dream is real. Look upon me and bask in my reflected glory. So here's how the show works. Every week, one of us will present just a little slither of the Infinite Escape Room, a Mobius curve of themes, puzzles, and dubious IP infringement, because it's my week to host, obviously, seamlessly linking to one another in an endless escape experience adventure. I'll be bringing the puzzles this week, while David and PG will be trying to solve them. And if they don't manage it in the time given to them, which I very much doubt, these guys are pros, then dire consequences shall befall them. And of course, escaping is thirsty work, so after each puzzle, we take a step halfway off infinity to the pubiverse, where we'll find a cozy boozer for a pint and a bit of a chat. That's the premise. Are you ready, folks?
What if we're interested in dire consequences?
I mean, you could just sit down in silence for 30 minutes and see what happens. We'll just shoot the shit.
I was about to say,
be a great episode.
Nothing sounds better to me than being trapped in an infinite escape room. Like, that's the dream.
Just 30 minutes of dead air.
I'll just...
That will be our most popular episode, I guarantee it. Maybe we'll put that for the bonus content for the Patreons. That's the top tier stuff. So let's enter the infinite escape room. So after a couple of hundred episodes of being threatened, almost killed, dragged to hell at least four times, pushed through history, sent to space, and forced to dance this merry dance again and again and again, you think, you know what, fuck this, and you decide to give yourselves a quintessential British holiday. You arrive at the remote isle of Summer Isle, where the locals are very happy to see you. In fact, you're their guests of honour. They have you feast on what meagre provisions they have, mostly shriveled up turnips. They don you in traditional costumes and even give you an insider's tour of their latest art installation, a hollow giant made from willow branches. It's only when the mayor of Summer Isle shoves you into the chest cavity of the statue and locks the gate do you begin to suspect that the holiday doesn't quite match the website's description.
I'm terribly sorry for the inconvenience, but as you've no doubt gathered by now, the harvest has not been terribly kind to us. We must make a sacrifice to our god and pray it is enough to bring forth the bounty of Uber Eats to our humble isle. Apparently you can't order chicky nuggies to arrive by boat on this remote isle. But with this sacrifice, we'll be blessed with a bounty of hot wings and reasonably priced kebabs.
As he walks away, he places a flaming torch at the base of the statue, and the flames begin to lick lazily up the willow branches. I mean, luckily, it's been a typically British piss-soaked day, so the wood is slightly moist. And by your reckoning, you've got about 30 minutes to find a way out of this wicker man before the whole thing goes up in flames. Your time starts now.
I've never been wicker manned before. I'm really excited about
it.
Literal burning man.
I thought this was midsummer.
It's all sort of the same thing.
Yeah, we'll get into it in the pub episode, but it's the same premise. So you are currently in the chest cavity of the Wicker Man. Above you is the head, below you are the legs, and to your left and your right are the arms. What would you like to do?
First...
Is there anything going on in this chest cavity that we should be taking note of?
So as you have a little look around, you see that the door you came in is bound by a rope with a knot that's so complex you can't untie it. But you admire the craftsmanship. It's very good, very ornate. Opposite that door is a large, thick bundle of woven willow branches that's lashed to the back wall. It's sort of woven like a wreath, intertwined with red and white ribbons, leaving a sort of a circular void in the center. And that void is closed off with a sheet of clear glass. In the chest cavity as well, there is a single small seat, too small for you to sit in, up from which extends a large wooden hand. And also in the chest cavity on the floor, you see there's a large suitcase that's locked with a four-digit lock.
I go high-five the hand.
You give it a good slabby high-five, you can get a splinter. It's it's quite old.
Well, you know, I'd like to start off by reminding the harvest gods that my culture, and me included, have been sending up offerings to the harvest gods for eons. So I don't know about David, but I feel like I'm, you know, I'm covered from retribution.
The harvest gods give you partial credit.
I have definitely been neglecting the harvest gods.
Just throw an odd, just the odd chicken nugget, just throw it on the ground for the homies.
All right, so you said that there's a seat with a hand coming up?
Yes, it's like almost like a round stool kind of thing, but too small for any person to sit on, and then you've got this sort of wooden hand extending out in the middle of it. You wouldn't want to sit on that.
I mean, maybe I would, but... Cut it!
That's one for the top tier Patreons.
All right, so David has high-fived this. I hope you wash your hands afterwards, David. And nothing happens. It's just a solid. Is it the size of an actual hand?
Yeah, more or less. I mean, you can articulate the fingers a little bit, but nothing seems to happen when you do.
What's the deal with this briefcase?
It's a sort of a large suitcase, the kind you would take to the airport on a holiday. And it appears to be locked with a 4-digit code.
Okay, 4 digits.
Let's take a closer look at the wreath, I guess.
So that wreath is lashed to the back wall. You can't actually move it or prise it off that back wall. And it's made of willow branches, and there are red and white ribbons interwoven throughout it. There's quite a large void in the center of that wreath, but you can't access that hole because it's covered over with a sheet of clear glass.
Can we look through that glass?
Yeah, you can. There's nothing on the other side. It is empty.
Can we take the wreath off of the wall, or is it like a fixed there?
It's pretty surprisingly fixed as well, considering that it's made of willow branches lashed to other willow branches. These guys may not have food, but they've got craftsmanship.
Okay. Can we get to any of these limbs?
You are free to explore any part of the Wicker Man. They've got the head, the left leg, the right leg, the left arm, the right arm.
Okay. PG, you choose the limb, I'll choose the side.
Okay, arms.
All right. Right arm.
You leave the chest cavity. And you go into the right arm. And as you do, you notice that you descend for longer than you'd expect to, given what you saw of the outside. So I think this arm seems to be a little bit longer than the other one. Again, in this arm, you see a tiny seat, too small for you to fit in, with a large wooden hand jutting up through the middle. Also attached to the end of that arm, you've got three levers that are made from willow. The left lever is wrapped in a yellow ribbon. The middle lever is wrapped in a white ribbon, and the right lever is wrapped in a blue ribbon.
Hmm.
Okay, is that's everything we have in this arm?
Yep, that's what you got on that one.
I'm going to pull on that white lever.
You pull on the lever with a white ribbon, it clicks into place, and then after a few seconds, it goes back into its original position.
Okay, good to know. We're learning things.
And we do the same with the yellow and the blue?
Do the same with both the yellow and the blue. You do it simultaneously. You do it one after the other. Same thing. Locks into place for a few seconds. Goes back to where it was before.
Do these stools move with the hands?
They don't, no. So you can articulate the fingers on the hand itself, but the arm and the stool itself can't be moved.
All right.
Okay.
Form the fingers into with the middle finger standing up, and then we scamper off to the left arm.
Super, superb. So you make the left arm, the right arm, flip the bird from within.
Yes.
That's for locking us in here. I gave you oranges at harvest.
It's not oranges they're after. It's reasonably priced kebabs, unfortunately.
Let's take a look at that left arm then.
Sure. So the left arm, you do notice you can't descend into quite as far, so it does feel shorter than the other one. And the bottom of that arm is sort of thick with a sticky honey. And in the midst of it, you see a small cage of bees. There's a note attached as well that says, Edward's Waggle Dancing Bees. These are not for snorting. And you notice that each bee has a unique pattern on its back. One's got one stripe, one's got two stripes, one's got three stripes, one's got four stripes. But all of these bees are lethargic and weak.
They're probably hungry. Can I go? I go scoop up some honey and I bring it over to them.
You take a nice big dollop of thick honey and offer it to the bees, and they just sort of and hang their heads again.
These are like bees that are also pandas, just like, you know, not even going to work up the will to like eat or procreate or anything.
All right, so great. So now my hands are sticky with honey. I'm sticking, I'm leaving handprints everywhere. I'm sticking to everything. Great. I'm just covered with straw. I've like tarred myself.
There is also another little seat in this short arm with another wooden hand extending from it as well.
All right, so
probably covered in honey.
Okay. We have quite the hand collection. Shall we explore some legs?
Yeah, let's go down to the left leg. We'll just keep going straight down.
Sure.
It's leg day.
So both legs are very similar, actually. So when you go down to the legs, you see that the flames are mostly concentrated at the base of this statue. So you can't stay too long before it just gets too damn hot. Again, in each leg, you see a tiny seat, too small for you to fit in, with a large wooden hand jutting up through the middle. Was it left leg or right leg you were going
left,
first?
Left.
Sure. In the left leg, you find a crudely drawn schematic of the statue that you find yourself in. And I will give you a link to that in this Riverside chat. It should be a link to a Google Drive picture that has the schematic there. If one of you could describe what you are seeing for the audience, that would be lovely.
So at the very top, there's a circle. Inside it, there's the number one. Actually, I'll start off by saying that on the left side of the paper, there's these two lines, and next to it, it says adjacent room entry. So I guess these are like the doors. So at the bottom of the head circle, there's a set of doors. It's going into like a rectangle that's marked 3. The left arm looks again like a rectangle that's marked 2. The right arm is extremely long. That is marked 4, and it has an entry both into the body at the top and from the bottom, an entry into the right leg. The right leg is marked 6. There's a doorway between the left leg and the right arm, and then the left leg is 5, and there's also 2 doors, one going up to the body and one connecting to the right leg.
Superb.
This is the weirdest Wicker Man I've ever been locked in.
Of all the Wicker Men that I've found myself inside, this one by far takes the cake. Yeah, that is all it appears to be in that left leg.
Okay.
So we couldn't have actually gone into the right leg from the legs are only connected to each other. One of them is not connected to the body. Interesting. Yeah,
so you would have had to have gone via a different limb to get to the right leg.
All right. Let's go get some peace of mind and visit the head.
Oh, we got to do the right leg.
Oh, yeah. We have to do the right leg.
Yeah, so in the right leg, again, it's quite hot because that's where the fire is starting to spread. You also get that seat with the wooden hand. But in the right leg, you can see that buried in the flaming willow branches of that foot, you spot a sort of a shimmer, almost like the reflection of like a gemstone.
We want it, precious.
It is currently covered in fire.
I mean, this still is on theme for my whole Gollum thing.
That's true, yeah. Gollum got the precious, then went into the fire. This is just, you save time by getting into the fire first.
Yeah, we're just more efficient. All right, let's go check out this head.
Cool. One thing I forgot to mention in the... in the shorter arm, when you were in there, one thing that you noticed, but I didn't tell you, is that you also have 3 levers as well. There's a left lever that's wrapped in red ribbon, a middle lever that's wrapped in green ribbon, and a right lever that's wrapped in black ribbon. You sort of pop your head into the arm as you pass the chest cavity on the way to the head and go, oh yeah, we missed that. Wait,
just as an aside, are we one entity between the two of us, or are we 2 different people in this thing?
You are 2 distinct people. You can act as one or as 2. That is up to you.
PG, how would you feel about pulling on the red lever and the white lever at the same time to see if that affects the wreath in the body?
Well, considering one is in the left arm and one is in the right arm, David, I don't know how that's physically possible, but I can certainly...
No, we split up. We're separate entities.
Yeah, but if we're in the arms, how can we see what's happening to the wreath?
Well, maybe they'll lock in place.
No, they lock in place and then they go back.
But that was only when we're wrong. We don't know what happens when we're right.
Okay, sure.
I could be wrong. But...
So who's going where?
I'll be on red. I'll be on the left arm with the red lever.
Yeah, go with your bees. I don't want anything to do with your bees. I go to the white lever.
Cool. So you shout across the chest cavity to do a countdown from three, and you simultaneously pull the red and the white lever, and you hear a whoosh come from somewhere around you. And when you go back into the chest cavity, you see that that pane of glass has slid down. You can now get into the hole inside the middle of the willow branches.
Ooh, good job,
I love
Spyra.
Being right.
Well, do we want to go in the hole or do we want to go look at the head first?
I'm open to both.
Let's go look at the head so then we can have all the information before we like check out this cavity.
Cool. Sounds good to me.
So you clamber up into the head. There's no ladder as such. You just sort of hoist yourself up on the willow branches. Again, in the center of the head, almost like in sort of in Power Rangers when they're in the Megazord and they've got that sort of console, you've got that single seat with the wooden hand jutting upwards from the floor. Also in the corner, which is weird because it's a round head, not sure where you'd find the corner, but in the corner you see a hunched figure rocking back and forth wearing an old beekeeper suit. You know, he's got like a big net over the face, the Kevlar gloves, not an inch of flesh exposed. And as you approach him, he startles. Oh, hello there, friends. My name's Edward. I guess you're the new sacrifices, yes?
Jump scare.
How'd they dupe you into stepping in? See, they told me this was an Airbnb, and I've been living here for the past 6 months. Now, I've been working on turning this statue into a kind of wooden golem, but it's not quite working. You see, I've snorted a lot of crushed bees. I kind of go in and out, and I've had some less lucid moments, shall we say. Now, I know I've added some security measures to my designs during these less lucid moments, but I've forgotten how it all goes together. Suddenly, his eyes roll back into his head and he starts convulsing and starts chanting,
six little pilots in six little parts and bring to life with fiery heart.
And then he lurches back and gives an almighty sneeze. Sorry about that. Bloody pollen all up in this head. It's these May bushes they've woven in here. The flowers play absolute buggery with my allergies. And then just carries on muttering to himself.
No, David, it's a death trap for you, for sure. With the hay fever.
Yeah,
pollen.
Yeah. I mean,
oh, no.
I'll be honest, though. Like, I didn't need to get tricked into this. Like, I've been very, very clear that if you want to kill me, you can just, like, make a death room and call it an escape room, and I will just willingly walk in.
Just in case my Scottish accent wasn't that legible, or yeah, I'll put what he said into the chat for you. There we go.
So he's been in here for 6 months, six little pilots in six little parts, and bring to life with the fiery heart.
Okay, and there's exactly six pieces of this wicker man.
There is.
So first, okay. I take a minute to castigate him for letting the bees get so weak and dying, for snorting them.
I mean, I think the bees that are still alive are probably kind of lucky.
Yeah, those bees are not for snorting. The sign's very clear about that.
All right, so he's got security measures.
Well, we've solved one of them.
Okay.
Let's go take a look in the wreath.
Sure. So you pop back down into the chest cavity, and that inside that wreath is you're able to sort of stick, I'd say, your hand in there. There's that sort of a big of a space, but there's nothing in there currently. It is empty.
We got to put the fiery heart in there.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So we're going to have to find a heart, and then we're probably going to have to bring it down to the fire and set it on fire.
Yes. Part's probably the heart is probably that glimmery thing in the fire.
Oh, can we steal his Kevlar glove?
I mean, he's wearing it, but you can probably ask him if you can borrow it, maybe.
Yeah. Hey, friend, can we get one of those gloves for just a moment?
he suddenly sort of his head snaps towards you and glares at you with like the laser focused intensity of a tweaker on the apex of a countdown for a solid 5 seconds before he just goes, absolutely, and hands you his gloves. Just give them back, yeah? So he peels off his gloves and hands them to you.
I was like, are we going to jump sequence and just go all the way down? And all right, let's do it.
Let's go see if we can grab that gem with the gloves.
Cool. So you put on the Kevlar gloves, and with them, you're able to scoop the gem out of the fire with only a light singeing. And you see that it is a glittering red ruby in the shape of a heart. You beat the fires off you just so you don't go full golem.
I don't really want to part. I don't want to part with it, but I think I have to.
You and PG suddenly start scrapping inside the Wicker Man as it catches fire to see who gets it.
I win, obviously, and I go and I pop it into the cavity.
Yeah, I'm just really fragile.
So you slot the ruby into the chest cavity and it very briefly begins to light up, but then it promptly falls out. It seems to be a little bit too loose inside that chest cavity.
Hmm.
It's tiny and shriveled, just like mine. Okay, so we need to like bulk it up or put it like set it in something, maybe?
Okay, well, we need a 4-digit combination. We did have 4 bees with 4 different number patterns on them. And we have many hands that we're going to have to expect set to something or just have a party with.
You're probably right about the
bees.
Should we go back to the bees?
Yeah.
Sure. So, yeah, so you look at those bees in their little cage that says not for snorting. And yeah, they look very weak. I don't know if a bee can look emaciated, but they look emaciated. They look lethargic and they're not really doing a great deal. One's snoring slightly.
Well, so there's a bunch of... So they didn't want the honey, but there's pollen and flowers up in like the head. Should we grab those? Maybe they'll eat those.
Yeah, sure. Let's do that.
So I run up to the head. I've got my honey-covered hands, and I just start smearing them all over the walls. I'm just collecting all the pollen. There's honey. I'm just absolutely tarred and feathered with, like, honey and pollen. I chase David around for a little bit, going, ooh, gonna get ya! Gonna get ya!
So as you sort of run out of the head, almost like a flowery chicken at this point, just covered head to toe in feathers, you run back down to where the bees are and just rub your hands all over the bees carefully so you don't get stung. The bees do take a hefty snort of the pollen from the flowers, and they are all suddenly revived, and they all begin to fly around in repeated but very different patterns. So there's a bee with a single stripe that flies horizontally left to right, then turns clockwise past a 90-degree angle and flies at a diagonal to the left. There's a bee with 2 stripes that flies in a semicircle, stops, then flies in another semicircle beneath it. The bee with 3 stripes just flies up and down in a straight line. This guy's got no class. And the bee with 4 stripes flies upwards before turning left and slightly and tightly spinning in a circle.
Okay. Horizontally left to right, then turns clockwise past a 90-degree angle and flies at a diagonal to the left. It looks like a pizza slice. All right, so David, are you thinking the bee with 3 stripes up and down is like a 1? Are we looking to make numerals 1, 2, 3, 4?
That's what I'm trying to figure out. My assumption is that we're trying to get 4 individual numbers out of this, but it is possible we're trying to get 1 individual thing out of this. Maybe they go together in a particular order, but my gut is to try and go and get 4 numbers out of this for the suitcase.
Okay, so the bee with 4 stripes flies up, turns left, and spins in a tight circle. That makes like a 9.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
So the bee with 1 stripe flies horizontally from left to right, then turns clockwise. Is he going in a circle then at that point? Or just
as in he's sort of facing the right and then just sort of turns to go to the diagonal left. It's really weird doing it with my hands on the camera, but yeah.
Oh, that's a 7.
So, yeah, I think so far I have blank 719. So
the bee with 1 stripe is 7. 7 is the first digit.
Oh, 7 the first?
Yeah.
Oh, I had it going in a different direction.
Yeah, yeah, the 7.
I see what you got going on.
The bee with 2 stripes. Okay. Flies in a semicircle, but we don't know which direction is the semicircle. Stops, then flies in another. Oh, that's a 3.
I think it's just an 8.
No, it's a 3. It's a semicircle. It's not a complete circle.
Oh, it's a semicircle. Oh, yep. That makes more sense.
So it's 7319.
Yeah, let's go and put that into the
Yeah, I'll just say this again for those of you listening at home. The bee with one stripe goes horizontally left to right. It turns and it makes a right-hand turn and goes kind of to the bottom left. So that's a 7. The bee with two stripes flies in a semicircle, stops, flies in another semicircle beneath it. So that's a 3. The third bee just goes up and down. So that's a 1. And then the fourth bee flies up, goes left, and then spins in a little circle. So we think that's 9. So we'll go to the suitcase and we'll put 7, 3, 1, 9 in.
And I'm glad PG's here because she knows what shapes the numbers are.
I'm one with the bees, David, that's why.
The bee whisperer.
I'm still very rattled by all of this pollen.
Well, yeah, exactly. Your eyes are like your eyes are like golf balls right now. You can barely see out of them. So yeah, I don't blame you.
I mean, between that and the bees, I'm just trying to not have this episode turn into My Girl.
Oh God. You can't see without his glasses.
God, why would you do that to us?
Oh God, yes, you've got pollen above you, you've got bees to your right, and you've got fire below you. This is the worst holiday ever. I mean, there's one arm that so far is not contaminated. Just hide up there for the rest of the episode. So you go into the chest cavity, you go into the suitcase, and you put in the code 7319, and it clicks open. You unlock the suitcase to find 6 puppets with grotesque rubber faces, and each of those puppets are labeled with their name. I will put them in the chat, but I'll also tell them for you. So there's one called Punch, one called Judy, one called Baby, one called Policeman, one called Crocodile, and there's one called Sausages. It's not so much a puppet as it is just like a string of knitted sausages with faces on.
I thought those were poops.
So I'm just glad that the suitcase opened because the banter we had following our solve was really confident, and it would have been very silly of us if we were wrong.
At that point, just throw it in the fire.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so these are the kind of, not like a marionette puppet, these are the kind of like a sock puppet. You stick your hand in them and you make them talk, that kind of thing.
Well, we do have a whole lot of hands floating around.
Okay, so you think we need to match each one with a number?
I think we need to figure out which spaces these things all go. I do feel confident in that.
All right, we've got Punch, Judy, Baby, Policeman, Sausages, and Crocodile.
All right, so I'm just going to take a guess here. We have one long arm that could be Punch, and we have one short arm that could be Baby.
Why do you think the long arm goes to Punch?
Well, because punching is a hand thing, and there's a long arm that would probably be more effective at punching than the baby arm. I'm shooting from the hip here.
I was about to go way. I'm like, are we way off in the deep end now? I'm thinking like the long arm of the law. We've got Judge Judy. And no, this is way, it's a stretch. I feel like I'm playing Code Names now.
Yeah. Yeah. PG's just switched to her own game night.
I think so. So you want to put Punch into the longer arm?
Yeah, I just want to see what happens.
Sure. So you go into the longer arm, you try to put Punch into position on that arm. It doesn't seem to quite hold as you want it to, but as you're sort of jostling him around, you do press a little button on the inside of the puppet, which activates a little voice box, and he says,
"I can't go in any room that's adjacent to Judy, because we'll fucking kill each other."
Oh.
All right.
Oh.
I'm kind of mad now.
Where's Lisa when you need her? Okay, so Punch won't go adjacent to Judy.
Well, we'll press Judy's button now.
Sure, you press Judy's button, and she goes,
"Oh, put me somewhere next to that fine policeman. He's bloody dreamy."
I hear that, sister. Got you. Well, let's see what the policeman has to say about that.
So you press the policeman's button and he just shouts out,
"I am the long arm of the law."
Aha! I knew it! The long arm.
You sunk my battleship.
I'm the long arm of the law.
Okay. Nice work, Bede. Let's just throw that one on there now.
He's mine, Judy. I'll fight you for him. Okay. Let's just go down the line then. How about the poops, the sausages? Oh,
and that would mean that Judy would need to go into the chest.
Well, he could
if she wants to be next to the policeman.
She could be in the leg. It's possible.
I don't know. I based off of this diagram, I do not believe. Oh, wait, no, they are. They could be because they're interconnected.
Yeah, but
all right,
we'll just.
So Judy could be in the. Okay, she could be in three or six.
All right. What about the little poops, the sausage links?
Sure. There's no place to reach your hand into for the sausages, but it's got like a squeaker toy in one of the sausages. You press that, and it goes,
"I'm a string of fucking sausages. I can't talk, can I? But if I did, I'd say, don't put me in the legs. Because people would be all like, is that a string of sausages in your trousers? Or are you just pleased to see me? Do me a favor. Don't put me in the fucking legs."
Fair enough.
Very aggressive, these old puppets.
So that the sausage would go in either 1, 2, or 3.
And then what about baby? The little baby.
You press a little baby and it says,
"Please keep Mr. Punch as far away from me as possible. If you don't, he's going to sit on me."
This is classic British folk tradition in action right here. Time-honored tradition before your eyes.
That Punch needs some anger management classes.
Oh, you don't know the half of it. We'll get into it in the purpose of this guy's good issues.
All right, then. But what's
up with Crocodile?
Mr. Crocodile.
You press Crocodile's little squeaker and he says,
"If there's a straight path between me and them sausages, I'm going to eat them sausages. Don't make me eat them sausages."
Okay. No straight path.
They've all got traces of honey inside them as well. So slightly sticky hands as you try to prise one off.
I'm trying to just draw out this diagram really quickly.
It is honey though, I assure you.
So we know the policeman is at number 4, and Judy wants to be next to the policeman. So she's either 3 or 6, right?
Yep.
I don't think Judy can be 3, David, because 3 is basically accessible
to everything. Well, yeah, I'm thinking the same thing. So I think that Judy has to be in the leg.
Unless Punch is in 6, is that still counts as next to?
Oh, well, you've got the doorways that connect each of those pieces there. But, and the doorways are what makes them adjacent.
So 3 and 6 are not considered adjacent because there's no doorway directly between 3 and 6.
That is correct.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah,
so it's
that's
possible
my read.
That Judy's in 3 and that Punch is in 6, right?
That is correct.
This is going to be real interesting for your listeners while we're sitting here staring at this thing.
Oh, that's fine. This is where the magic of editing comes in. I always forget whenever there's a logic puzzle, yes, there will be dead air. as they sketch it all out.
And sausages can only be in 1, 2, or 3. But they cannot be a straight path between the sausage and the crocodile.
I think I have a solve that might work here. Let me just verify it. Punch is
so
not next
let me
to
ask you this, Jamie. From 1 to 5, is that considered a straight path or no?
Yes, that is one continuous straight line.
I see. And then 2 all the way to 4 is a straight path, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the crocodile's able to peek through those doorways and see them sausages looking all tasty and plump.
Okay. I think I have a solve.
Okay.
So I think that the baby is in the head. Sausage is so at number 1. Sausage is at number 2 in what I'm going to call it, the short arm. Judy's in the chest. Policeman is in the long arm. Croc is in number 5, that left leg. Punch is in the right leg on 6, and that is my solve.
Do you want to pop those puppets into those slots?
Yes.
Cool. So you go around the Wicker Man and you put each puppet into those individual slots. As you do, you can hear the clacking of the articulated fingers as it grips in and locks the puppet in place. And once you've got the final one locked in place, you hear all 6 puppets simultaneously shout,
"That's the way to do it!"
Nice
and
job.
And they now cannot be moved from their slots.
I never solve logic puzzles.
I'm impressed.
Good going.
All right. Okay, so we've got the puppets locked into place now. We have opened up the suitcase. We've opened up. Should we try? Well, what's the difference now, though? We still have the heart that goes in the thing into the.
Yes, you've got the ruby, but it doesn't quite hold when you put it into that void in the wreath.
We've still got all these levers, David, with colors.
We do, but we did use them.
We used.
We haven't seen other colors, I don't think, that have, like, we were clued to the wreath being red and white, which is why I tried it.
You think it was only for the red and white ones?
I mean, that was my initial thought there was that the wreath was woven together with red and white wicker. And that was why I wanted to try that.
Yeah, but now we've got these. I mean, I feel like maybe we need something for the puppets. If we turn them, maybe they'll do something with the puppets because their puppets are on the hands now.
So we had that six little pilots in six little parts and bring to life with the fiery heart. What if the heart now fits?
Okay, we can try again.
Sure. So you pop the gem into the central cavity. Again, it looks as if it starts to illuminate, but then it falls out again. It's too loose to fit inside that void.
Okay.
You have about 3 minutes remaining.
Oh, my God.
Oh, boy. Okay, so we have...
so close.
All right, I just go start pulling levers. Do the levers do anything else?
You pull another lever, and you hear whoosh, the glass come back up on that void.
I fucked it up.
What if we put it back in and then pull the lever? Let's open it up. Let's pull white and red
okay.
to open it. And then we need two people to pull it.
Yeah. Well, yes, you can reconfigure it so that the red and white levers are down and the glass comes down to reveal the void again.
Okay. Can we put it there and like use the suitcase or something to hold it in place?
And, sure.
and then go back and pull the white and red levers to slot the glass in place.
Yeah, sure. So you try and wedge it up with the suitcase to try and hold it in place as long as you can. So when you put it in, it starts to glow and emanate this light. The suitcase doesn't hold for very long. So you run down into one of the arms and you just start pulling levers up and down to see what fits. And you hear the glass come up, which locks the gem inside the chest cavity. And with that red gem locked in the heart cavity, the tiny creepy puppets piloting each part of the statue, their eyes begin to glow, and you feel this wicker golem activate with an audible creaking and cracking of branches. And the entire thing lurches as it wrenches free of its plinth and stomps away, squashing several villagers and covering them in flames.
They had it coming.
That's fair. Lord Samurai himself is seen hurling himself off the nearest cliff and into the sea to put out the inferno because everybody wears sort of asbestos and shell suited things because they're behind on the time. So everything's very flammable. No, asbestos is the opposite of flammable. Scratch yeah. that. He's wearing toilet paper. That's flammable. All the while, you can hear Edward up above you in the head singing at the top of his voice in some sort of creepy psalm. Like a very awful blazing megazord, the pint-sized puppet pilots get the giant to do the stop, drop, and roll technique to put the flames out on the statue itself. It stands up again, and slightly smoldering, your wicker golem begins to stomp towards the harbor to get the first boat off this weird fuck island. To be continued, and you've solved my puzzle. Congratulations.
Yay!
Can I do one more thing before we leave?
Oh, please do.
I give Edward back his gloves.
Oh, bless you. So he's very, very grateful. Slightly pissed that his house is now an RV, but for all intents and purposes. But once he comes back to lucidity, I think he'll thank you for it.
Great.
You did great. You had like a minute to spare, minute and... change. So very, very well done.
Was that really the solve?
Thank you much. This
you
is
just
so
had
much
to
fun.
Flip the levers back up to lock it in place?
We'll get into it in the pub episode, but there were a number of solutions that could have worked on that final bit. There was a sort of a breathing space to sort of be a bit creative and wacky, but I'll get into it in a
little
bit.
I was about to use my honey and straw, and I've formed some type of like cement, like, you know, gel that I was going to use to glue it into place next if the levers didn't work.
That could be the alternative ending. So that's it for this episode. Come join us next week at the Burning Man pub. We will have a drink and a little chat about the room, what we just did. Thank you all so very much for listening, and thank you to David and PG for being our solvers today. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review on your podcasting platform of choice, because, you know, we like us, we hope you like us, and we want more people to like us. And every review you leave will get us in front of more people, and it just makes me feel good. Here's one of the most recent ones we had from Elianara, who said that we are a lovely, slightly unhinged escape room podcast with a ton of puns and jokes. Highly recommend it. I do agree with you on lovely, and I more than agree with you on the unhinged. So thank you very much, Elianara. We love you lots, and we'll see you next time on the Infinite Escape Room. Bye-bye.